New term, new start, same show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Motown 4. Well, out of practice, huh? It's not good. I edit this stuff out, but my goodness, the song just finished playing and I forgot to turn the microphone up. So, as I said, out of practice, but that kind of makes sense, I suppose, because it's been the Easter holidays recently, so I've been chilling, taking it easy, been going home, seeing the family. So, a little bit out of practice when it comes to the booth, let's call it. But anyways, I needed to play that song because I've actually struck up a new relationship recently. And I believe this entity is going to be my new best friend. We're talking about red wine here. It's crazy. I don't know why it's taken me so long in life to actually come across red wine, but I'm a massive, massive fan of it. Now, it all started recently when my grandmother came down. I'm sure you guys have listened to it, as you're all paying crazy attention to Burst. Grandmother's stories, they're fantastic, eclectic, superb, just incredible bit of literature skills. So you've got to check out my grandmother, Grandmother Deb, love her to bits. But she took me out, not for one meal, her, two meals. And as a student, who am I to say no to that? So went through, had my fish and chips at the beautiful Chez Fred. Other fish and chips are available, but that one was certainly great. And part of the meal deal was a free glass of wine. So, or a little bit of beer as well, a half pint of beer. But I'm there, my grandmother, two of her friends, you know, sophisticated company. So who am I to be allowed and have a beer? I went highbrow. So I got my glass of wine and nailed it in one sip, which is kind of like my techers when it comes to drinking wine. I shot wine. It's a little bit loutish, but yeah, I suppose it's the manifestation of my inner character. I'm not allowed. I'm a lovely guy just trying to make words to fill up time. So anyways, two glasses of wine deep, and I was like, yo, this is great. It's a really good buzz as well. So I think I'm now like five bottles deep in my room at the moment. I'm collecting a little whatever. Anyways, this whole tangent came from the fact that me and my new best friend, Wine, we had a great time last night. I indulged, I was asleep early, woke up with a little bit of a headache, but nothing too crazy. So that's why I had to start the show with a bit of Easy by the Commodores. Taking it nice and chilled. I love that song, I think it's fantastic, and I could play it every single day, regardless if it's the weekend or not, and just be like, yeah, this is my approach to the day. Very relaxed, you see, I'm a chill guy. Very, very, very... very chilled. There you go. I'm so chilled, he can't even think of another word to use. We're just going to stick with chilled. And on top of that, I'm looking at like a baby blue microphone in front of me, which kind of like makes me feel a bit chilly. Anyways, we're going to move on. I am settling a debate right now. Now, ever since I started this show, this song, I've been listening to it a fair few times. Like, I'm not too sure what I prefer. Is it the original or is it the cover? Now, the tune I'm chatting about is You Can't Hurry Love, her done by the absolutely fantastic guy that is Phil Collins. I love Phil. I've talked about it a few times on Burst before, and I'll defend him forever and a day. I saw his concert before. It was 2.5 hours, and it was the best 2.5 hours of live musical entertainment I've seen in my life. Absolutely a legend in the UK music scene. I'd say worldwide. And for some reason, he's hated. I'm not too sure what the deal is. I know he suffered a really messy divorce some time ago, and the tabloids probably threw him under the bus. But actually, like, delivering musical content, I don't think many people can touch him. So I'm a huge fan of Phil, and we're talking about You Can't Hurry Love here, so he's done that. And also there's some strange little lady, I think it's Diana Ross and the Supremes, they also did it, and they did it originally. Now, I always had this big issue when it comes to songs, that the song that I listen to and familiarise myself with most is the song that I enjoy, and we're talking about the Phil Collins version here. So I'm going to say going into this, there is a little bit bias. I do love a bit of Phil. But we're going to play both back to back. I'm going to be honest here with my opinions, and I'm going to let you know how I feel about it. So coming up, we have got Diana Ross and the Supremes with You Can't Hurry Love.
Just have to.
And now we've got Phil's turn. Here we are, the same tune, You Can't Hurry Love, Mr. Phil Collins. It's time to break this down, huh? Phil Collins versus Diana Ross. So let's start off with the vocals. Personally, I believe that Phil does the better vocals on that tune. You know, I think it's a little bit, Diana Ross is a little bit too high and a little bit soft. You know, it misses that impact that Phil delivers. I think the actual song is perfectly suited to the tone of Phil's voice. So there you go. Phil beats Diana when it comes to that. The actual band. Now, I can't believe I'm saying this. I assume that it would be the Funk Brothers who laid down the track for the Diana Ross and the Supremes tune, but I actually think Phil sounds better. It's a little bit fuller, a little bit richer, and it's also a bit punchier as well. And there's a bit towards the end, I think it's just coming into the second or third verse, and it goes their soft voice, and it keeps coming with like the snare and punches, and like that's done better on the Phil tune. So the music sounds better, I think, or should I say the actual... Well, the music, yeah, I suppose that is right. The music does sound better on Phil's tune. I prefer the vocal as well. And as a person, I prefer Phil Collins over Diana Ross for absolutely zero reason, apart from the fact that he's Phil Collins. So, that being said, hands down, unanimous decision, Mr. Phil Collins is better than Diana Ross. Okay, maybe not. But You Can't Hurry Love, I actually 100% sincerely prefer Phil's tune to Diana. So that being said, it's time to celebrate the legend that is Mr. Phil Collins. I've gone a little bit astray here, and I'm going to play a song that ain't a Motown tune. Now, originally, I was going to play A Groovy Kind of Love, as I loved that song growing up. I'm not too sure why, because it's crazy mushy love tune. I loved it when I was like 7 years old. I listened to it recently, and it was just a little bit too, So I've chosen like my second favourite Phil tune to play for you guys, Mr. Cowboy himself, if you peoples have ever seen the video. And now we have got Mr. Phil Collins with Billy, Don't You Lose My Number.
Thank you.
Well, that certainly satisfied my Phil fix. I'm very happy right now, sitting here in Studio One, big smile on my face, and ready to play some more relevant music for the show, i.e. Motown tunes, ladies and gentlemen. Now, next song coming up is done by a staple of Motown, one of the, I'd say, founding members. I'm not sure if that's actually correct. We are talking about the Four Tops right now. And the tune I'm about to play for you is Reach Out and I'll Be There. I've actually got a little story to tell you about this, but I tell you what, I'm going to keep you in suspense and I will tell you afterwards.
Until happiness is just an illusion.
what an awesome song. I'm a big fan of that. But unfortunately, the lead singer of the Four Tops, Mr. Levi Stubbs, he wasn't. Now, the Four Tops were a little bit different to most vocal quartets, or should I say most vocal groups, as they had a baritone leading the group. So a baritone would be Mr. Bass Guy. And normally you'd have a tenor leading the group, who would be high. I suppose a good example of that is Smokey Robinson. So the Four Tops had their own kind of like unique brand of singing, which was led by someone with a bassy voice. Now, when this song was first presented to them, especially the vocalist, said Mr. Levi Stubbs himself, he was like, yo, I'm not the right person to sing this song. This isn't right. Get one of the other Four Tops to sing it, because they were all great singers. They just chose to have this person lead the group. The rest of them could all really knock out tunes too. So Levi was like, yo, I'm not the right person for this song. Get another member of the Four Tops to do it. And the producers turned around and said, nah, mate, you're the one doing it. You're the right person. Now, this song, and I suppose another one as well I'm going to play later, shows how much a producer's influence has in creating a tune. The band weren't a big fan of this song, and they didn't think for a second it would be a hit, but it was actually, you know, in the eyes of history, it's pretty much their biggest song that they've ever done. So, as I said, monster tune, done by monster bassist, monster baritone himself, Mr. Levi. Anyways, so we got the vocals down, you know, after a little bit he agreed to do it and the producers were really happy with it, but the band, they didn't have a clue how to be playing the song either. And the producers were literally going up to the guitarist and be like, you know, I don't think that's a Motown song. But anyways, a little reference to South Park there for those who pick up on what I just done. So yeah, you know, go over to the guitarist and say, yo, play it like this. Go over to the drummer and, you know, I actually remember him telling this. He's like, look, this is how you need to play the bass drum. So, you know, the drum you play with your foot. You know, he would walk them all through it and be like, yo, you need to do this, you need to do that. Da-da-da-da-da. Song was cut, finished, mixed, and they're like, yo, we've got an absolute hit, a monster of a song. So, yeah, fair play to the producers. They absolutely kicked bum when it comes to that. They've done very, very well. So, yeah, great song. And I'm going to play another great song, which I ain't got a story for either, which is Martha and the Vandellas, Dancing in the Street.
We'll be right back.
Wow, okay, cool. So this next song I'm going to play, you nearly got scrapped. We were never going to hear such a great tune. And to be honest with you, I do think it's great. I told you how I got my head round all these Motown tunes. I put the Best of Motown 4 CD Greatest Hits onto my phone. Walking to and from university, I'd listen to all the Motown tunes on loop. And when I come across one that I really liked, I put it in my favourites and I'd establish my top tunes. Now this one I never heard of before, but it would start off with some awesome little drum track, coming with a funky bass line, and I'd just start walking like an absolute gangster. Like, I loved it so much. Really, really cool song. And then it comes to my surprise that this nearly got scrapped straight off the bat, and it was all down to the drummer's perseverance that actually brought it back through and resurrected it like our Lord and Saviour, Mr. JC himself. Pretty relevant considering we just come back after Easter break, I believe. But anyways, now we have got the Commodores with Brick House. So the Commodores had just finished recording their new record. They're really happy with it. They thought it was pretty much complete. Producer man walks through, is like, yo guys, I've got another song for you that I want you to be doing. I want you to play. Now, you know the Ohio Players? They got this tune Fire out and everyone's like, yeah, awesome. I want you to play a song like that. Now, I would have downloaded the Ohio Players Fire tune and would have played it for you just now, but my iTunes account is at a nice big fat zero. And being the student that I am, I ain't got any monies to be putting it in there. And I'm no thief. I'm not going to go robbing things off the internet. So unfortunately, ain't got that to play for you. But if you go check out Ohio's Player Fire right now, press pause on this. Pause. YouTube, all that. Well, I should have actually told you what to do and then say pause. But anyways, go listen to it on YouTube and you see what the deal is. So the band members are like, okay, cool. We'll try and do this. And the drummer, you know, starts off with a fill. And he was like, yeah, okay, that's kind of cool. And kept working. Then he came up with something that he thought was pretty good. And he started banging away. And he was kind of happy with the shape of the song, but still knew that it needed improvements. Anyways, a little bit later on, all the Commodores sit down and they have a vote. And there's six of them. Four of the Commodores say, I don't like this tune, scrap it. And two of them are like, yo, keep it on, it's going to be cool. So, you know, democracy rules, the song gets scrapped. The drummer turns around to the engineer, is like, yo, can you just give me a copy of that tape, please, so I can go home and mess with it? Engineer turns around and he's like, you know, everyone's voted and it's not being on the record. He's like, yo, I know, but just trust me, give me this tune, let me see what I can do. And he went home and he started like messing around for however long. He says the amount of different fills he did to get the intro down. I know I messed around with it before, but he really concentrated on that. And then finally he got it and he got the little drum groove going. And he says lyrics started just pouring into his brain and coming out. He says it's the easiest thing he's ever written in his life. Even came up with the hook for like, she's a brick house. And he mentions, you know, we all know the expression, you know, something brick house. And he didn't want that a connotation to apply, but he kind of did some kind of like loose messing around and he kind of said, you know what, she's a brick house, she's awesome, she's fly, she's dope, all these other things as well. So he was mad happy with it, gave it back to his producer. Producer listened to it, gave him a little look and said, yo, you've just made a hit, mate, well done. So there you go, that song was nearly scrapped, but just for the perseverance and some music creativity from the drummer, he pulls it through. And I would say that's probably like my top 15 Motown tunes for sure. It's just so funky and cool. Definitely left field. And also, you know, props to the producer as well, who realized that they needed a song like that on their record. You know, you've got the Commodores, which is easy, the song I played before, you know, Once, Two Times, Three Times, A Lady, All Night Long, you know, all kind of like nice songs, but it didn't have anything too like boom, too funky. And now they do with Brick House. So yeah, that's super awesome. Now, I'm going to play you a little bit of contemporary Motown, I'm going to say. So as I said a little bit before, I listened to all the tunes and, you know, a lot of them had that Motown vibe. A few of them are left field. And then I was surprised to come across what I consider to be like modern music, I suppose. So here's the first one I'm going to play you. As I said, a little bit of contemporary Motown for you. It's Shanice with I Love Your Smile.
Thank you.
All right, BVH classic right there. Another song I'd never listened to all the way through before putting out air for you guys. And to be honest with you, it was pretty cool towards the end. It had like a funky little bridge breakdown that I really appreciate where the bass line went. And also at the end as well, it's like, you know, the little words, little talk is like, oh, I love your smile. That's nice as well. Huh? Nice little cute bit to add into the tune. So cool. We've also got another what I consider to be contemporary Motown tune for you. And that is The Barge. I believe it's The Barge with Rhythm of the Night. So enjoy. Okay, there. Well, I just wanted to play them last two songs to show you a different aspect, I suppose, a different side of Motown, not just like generic Motown music. They also, you know, had to stick with the times a little bit. And I suppose after 20 odd years of knocking out what people would consider, you know, standard Motown tunes, they had to stay with the market and evolve. Now, unfortunately, I haven't got this tune loaded up for you, but there was a cool little segment I heard some bloke talk about. It's actually a four top tune. I'm not too sure which one it is, but the guy was talking about the wah wah pedal. Now, Jimi Hendrix, you know, I'm pretty sure that's a wah-wah pedal. You know, that guitar definitely is going wah-wah. And because of that, and, you know, its impact on the mass market and the fact it was such a commercial success, Motown had to incorporate these sounds into their music. So that's what they were doing just there. They were trying to stay with the times and, you know, whatever songs, really, nothing too crazy. The Shanice tune, the I Love Your Smile, something I used to hear when I was growing up for sure. So it definitely was popular. The last one, not so much, but, you know, I wouldn't mind hearing that on a nice Caribbean holiday. That will get me going. Now, guys, time for a new section. No idea what I'm going to call it, so I'm going to name it now. I believe it's Ben's Mystery Music. There we go. Now, right now, we have got Gnarls Barkley with Transformer. Well, there's no way Mr. Berry Gordy wouldn't have signed CeeLo Green after a vocal performance like that. That tune always blows me away. I love it to bits. I think it's kind of like magical. And probably the only reason this word comes to mind is because of the title of the tune. But it does transport you to like another place. It's something, I want to say primitive, primal. I don't know. It just resonates with inside me. So anyway, super cool tune. And guys, we're at Mo 4 now. And this is the first time I've utilized this act in my show, which is a little bit of, I'm going to say, a sacrilegious, sacrosanct, sacra something, sacra blur, sacra not good Ben. Anyways, this act nearly didn't get signed by Motown. Now, Berry Gordy signed Little Stevie Wonder when he was a bambino and realized once he's got a kid involved that you've got to deal with parents and parents can be a right performance. So when his group of brothers came in, Yeah, well, he was like, okay, you know, they can obviously sing. I'm talking about the Jackson 5 here. I don't need to set it up later. It was overly apparent as well that Michael was just beyond G'd out. I believe he gave him a Smokey Robinson song to sing. I think it was definitely a love song. I think it's Who's Loving You. And Berry Gordy was blown away the fact that this 8-year-old was singing a love song like he, you know, lived 30 years in love and the love of his life has just ran off with someone else. Like that, the heartbreak was really, really tangible. So in that sense, you know, it was just super cool. Michael had mad talent, but Berry was just reluctant to do it because he was like, I can't be bothered to deal with the parents. And, you know, by all accounts, he's probably right. I believe Joe Jackson, the dad, was a little bit strict. So who knows? He might have got that switch to Berry Gordy as well. Anyways, enough of the setup for this monster tune. Guys, we have got the Jackson 5 with I Want You Back. So skilled as a kid, Michael Jackson's actually scary. You know, I don't particularly want children myself, but my goodness, if I produce someone with that talent, I'll be mad happy. I'll be trying to impregnate any woman that I could come across in order to create a little Michael Jackson. I'm essentially selfish, you see, and just want to put my children out to work to make crazy monies, especially if you've got Michael as well. It's not like you have to wait for him to be like 18, 21, 25 to start earning proper money. This kid's a cash cow, like the age of 8. Like, it's awesome. So, I don't want children unless they're going to be as talented as Michael Jackson, basically, is the deal. A little bit selfish, but from one little musical G to another little musical G, but this one was a little bit older, you see. We've got Stevie, I was going to call him Stevie Wonder, and I suppose that is his name, not Stevie Winwood, Back in the High Life Again. I love that song. That's actually going to... Tangent left and right. Guys, I'm actually going to tell you, I think Ben's Motown now is coming to a death, really. I'm running out of like source material. I'm sure there's loads more out there. I've only done four shows. You know, I can get a fifth one out, but then I'm going to be scraping the bottom. But I've got a few other ideas planned. That's what I referenced before and then just thought, oh, I'm going on a tangent and then went on to this little tangent. But still, Stevie Winwood back in the high life is going to be coming through. But I had such a beautiful introduction to Stevie Wonder, signed, sealed, delivered. Baby, I am yours. Okay, there's one part of that song that just sticks out over everything else. Anyways, in my ears, especially with these cool headphones on, so I can hear things as crystal clear, like the bass line, super awesome. And I didn't even get to talk about the super awesome bassist, James Jameson, who was Mr. Man when it comes to the Funk Brothers, the Motown band. Now, I had a really cool little story to tell you about James Jameson, but that's going to stay for Mo 5. Mo 5 is going to go ahead. It's going to happen. Also, the Wah Wah story. Forget about that because I'm going to be telling that on Mo 5 too as well. So anyways, ladies, gentlemen, anyone else who's listening to this as well, thank you very much. I survived another episode. I hope you guys have too. Have a great day. Have a great life. Smile.